And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3760 of the Survival Podcast. And good Monday morning. Yes, it is Monday morning. And this might be the last show that you get for a while. Hold on. Not the last show. The last show you get with that flag behind me and in my old digs in my office. As I said the other day, you might hear a little bit of an echoey sound in here because so much has moved out. And hopefully today I'm going to take my main computer and all my other equipment, move it across the hallway into my wife's office, and then the mass exodus of everything that's left can begin. And we're going to have a new cool wall behind us, a whole new studio to look at in the future. But that may take a couple weeks once I actually get the work started. And I really haven't started yet. It's a lot of crap to move out of here. But the whole scenario will change soon. Just sharing something I'm excited about with you. And it could do it a lot faster by paying someone to do it. And I usually take that approach. But something about this project makes me want to do it myself. So this is going to be a DIY project mostly. Though I may bring in kind of a professional to take care of getting that popcorn shit off my ceiling, because I have a feeling once it comes down, it might need a little bit of work from someone a little bit more skilled with a scraper than or like a putty knife than me, with some of the damage that might be up on that roof, which is now almost as old as I am. Anyway, and I'm pretty old if you look at the grayness of the beard as the Santa Spirko experiment of 2025 continues. You know, if you only listen to the audio, you should probably check out a recent video, even if just for a couple seconds, to see the magnificence that I have grown in this year starting in July. And if you want to see it, you better check it out. I guess the old videos will be there. But if you want to see it live, you better check it out before I go away for Christmas, because when Santa comes back after Christmas, Santa goes on vacation and the old digs are going to be back with the new jack. Anyway, with that, what are we going to talk about today? This is actually one of my laws of life in my upcoming second book, Laws of Life 2. Something makes me want to change the name of that a little bit, but for now, that's the code name for the project, Laws of Life 2. And it is simply being prepared isn't radical, it's responsible. And here's how I'm coming at this. You know, when I look back at all of it, and I mean all of it, like my childhood, especially like that second half of childhood where you're like really a young adult, you know, you're in your teens, you're in the high school years, all the way up to founding of the Survival Podcast. You know, I grew up in those young years in rural Pennsylvania, and we did a lot of things that people today consider like classic prepper behavior, like stuff they make TV shows about, you know, prepping shows, homesteading shows, et cetera. We had a garden, and I mean a big garden. It was about a quarter acre, and it was really more like a half acre space. It was like a quarter acre of grow space because we had a bed and then an equidistance row in between and then another bed for working. A classic, looked like a little small scale farm. We grew a ton of food. I mean a ton of food. My grandmother canned food like you wouldn't believe. She was like a machine beginning about August, getting ready to go through August and September, about that 60-day period when the harvest would hit peak. She'd just be socking away stuff until she was finally like, that's it. I don't have any more in me this year. And we would start either eating our brains out or she would pack up bags and have me distribute it to other members of the community, building those relationships and taking care of older people who couldn't have a garden anymore. Because we grew up in kind of a poor area. So much so we fished and we hunted as much for the meat as we did for the sport. Where I went to school, as far as I know, still to this day, the first day of buck season, school's closed. They closed school, and the first day of the season was always a Monday. They closed school on a Monday so that kids could go hunting, because if you didn't do it, half the kids wouldn't be there anyway. So it was just kind of like, hey, we might as well do that, make this one of the days off. You know, we organized berry picking groups for like blueberries and blackberries, huge groups, 40, 50 people. And then each family would get a share because we had different roles. Some people would pick, some people would cull, some people would package. And at the end of that, everybody would go home with a large collection. We foraged mushrooms. We did those big picking adventures, but I would go out and pick stuff all the time anyway. We, you know, my grandparents kept chickens. Just a half dozen, but also one big ass mean Chinese guard goose to help protect the chickens. And he was kind of chill with us, but like when even like friends came over, like, so watch out for the goose. The goose would F you up, man. We heated with a coal stove in the kitchen. We also had a coal furnace down in the basement. And that coal furnace was tied into a radiator style, old school radiator style system. So it's basically steam moving through from a boiler to heat the house. So power goes out, the house stayed, you know, warm. That the coal stove alone would keep half the house so warm, you know, you might even dampen it down a little bit once in a while because of how overly warm it could be, except on, you know, very cold days. And we still had a generator. We still had a generator to keep everything else running and operating. It was just a normal thing. Most people had a generator. If something broke, we fixed it. You didn't call a guy. You fixed it. You figured out how to fix it. If you couldn't quite do it, if you didn't quite know what to do, you knew somebody or you knew somebody that knew somebody, and that was your guy. Your guy was the guy that came over and did you a favor more often than a guy you paid money. And that guy would get either be owed a favor in the future, which would be happily repaid when there's something we could do for them. And even if we were going to do that, kind of like that, hey, I'll help you when you need to help me. And it wasn't even unsaid. They probably still left with a couple quarts of my grandma's chow chow relish or maybe some deer jerky or deer sausage if it was really a big favor or we just really liked them. You know, maybe some pickled ram's head mushrooms or something like that. So we were bartering. Like all the stuff we talk about doing, if the shit hits the fan, we were just living that way. And, you know, I'm old, but I ain't that old. This ain't like back in 1948, right after the war. This is the 1980s. Right? This is a middle, smack dab middle of the YOLO. You only live once. Everybody's partying on Wall Street. And this is how we were living in rural Pennsylvania. And I'm sure there's people in that area that live the same way still to this day. Right now, that are still carrying on kind of the old ways, you know. So I look at it like, you know, we were also poor. And I don't mean poor like impoverished poor, like we didn't know where our next meal was coming from because we did all this stuff. But we couldn't just do things when we wanted to. And emergencies would come up. A car would break down or the same kind of stuff we talk about today. Somehow there was always enough money to get by. Somehow there was always a way to do it. And it was a way that, like, it wasn't like it took months to figure out or like it was really agonizing. It was like, oh, shit, what are we going to do? And then within a day, you had it figured out. Somehow we were able to do that. We kept a balance in the limited budget that we had. Even with that limited budget, everybody saved a little bit of money, you know, because you knew that it might come up at some point. Nobody had a credit card. You know, I was completely anti-credit card when I started this podcast 17 years ago. Eventually, I softened on a little bit for certain reasons, like flying and needing to get a rental car as policies changed and stuff like that, right? Are you getting prepared for the climate change? No, I'm not. I'm not worried about the climate change at all. Live a resilient life, and it won't matter if the climate changes. If you mean in the hysterical way, whoever you are, because I don't recognize your handle, I don't care at all. Because being taxed at a higher level is not going to change the weather. And if you believe that, you're probably not going to like it here. Anyway, let me get back to what I was saying. Preparedness was kind of baked into me from an early age, right? It really was. When I talk about my preparedness mindset today, it might be a bit broader and more nuanced and more thought out and not just the way you live, but the way you design your life so you can live it to its fullest potential. But, you know, I'm even continuing, including things today like insurance, how well you are able to present yourself at work in your career. Like all of these things are types of preparedness. And no one balks at the types of preparedness like that, like having insurance on your home. That's part of my preparedness plan. It's not just for the end of the world as we know it, not just Teotihuacan, right? It's for the house burns down or somebody plows a car through your house. I've never had a car plow through my house, thank God. But when we lived in an apartment, at least it was a part of somebody else's problem, but we had a car slam into our stairwell and it was like an earthquake when it hit. And I had somebody take out almost 300 feet of my fence line in a car. And the only thing that stopped them was an oak tree. That was about 3 or 4 years ago that happened. So things go wrong. So when people have insurance, no one freaks out. When people get something like long-term disability insurance, no one freaks out. But you start talking about having insurance for your food or your water, you know, that you depend on. Having a reserve of money beyond the typical, hey, I save for my retirement. People are like, oh, you're a prepper, you're crazy. Buy a little gold and silver, buy a little bit. Oh, you're a prepper, you're crazy, right? And no, this is just responsible behavior. And I'm going to make a case to you today that it's actually the case that not doing it is directly then irresponsible. And we have somehow turned non-preparedness into a virtue where our grandparents, or some of you younger folks, maybe your great-grandparents or even your great-great-grandparents, tried to instill preparedness as a virtue in their children and their grandchildren. That's what we're coming at today. And I also want you to ask yourself two questions as we get ready to dig into this episode. How can any responsible adult actually be responsible if they do not have preparedness as a basic ideal they aspire to, especially somebody with a family like kids and a wife and things like that, or kids and a husband, something like that, right? And then the other one is, why does the government, industry, and the media have what appears to be kind of a warfare mindset against anybody that thinks in the terms of true preparedness? Anything beyond, say, for your retirement and study for tests. Those are also forms of preparedness, right? And put insurance on your car and your home, right? Anything beyond that, they're like, oh, he's crazy. Why? Why would they do that? I bet many of you know. there's people tearing up the climate change guy in the chat. That's fun. I'll let you guys do that. I'm going to try not to pay attention to it and stick to my tasks today, all right? So we're going to go into all this. Before we do, real quick, I want to remind you of a couple of ways you can help support this show and the work that we do. And one is by doing business with our sponsors. And one of our sponsors, in fact, a sponsor of today for today, is Above Phone, where you can rise above with the best privacy phones, laptops, and tablets that there are. You know, your device manufacturer spies on you, and they sell your information to anybody who wants to market to you, and they give it to the government when they're asked to do so. The people that build the apps that you use on your phone, your tablets, et cetera, the people that build those apps, they actually spy on you and collect your data, especially the apps that are free. If an app is free, then you are the product. Just think about it that way. And last but not least, and certainly not least, your carriers spy on you, and they track you, and they make your data available to any and all players. But you can make it all go away with Above Phone, where you can actually take your privacy and your technology back at AbovePhone.com. And remember, MSB members, you get $75 off any phone at AbovePhone.com. Next up today, most of you folks out there in this audience tend to be dog people. I've met a few of the people in this audience over the years that aren't, but even the people that don't own dogs are kind of like, one day I'd like to own a dog. Maybe they don't own a dog because of their career, or they live in an apartment that won't allow it, or they travel too much or something like that. But their goal long term is to have a dog as part of the family. Dogs have always been family members for us here in the Spirit Cove household. We've had dogs since as long as I've been with Dorothy, going back now 29 years. We've had dogs in our lives. And one of the best things about dogs is that they are such a valued member of a family when they're properly trained. Otherwise, dogs are problems. They jump all over company. They dig holes under fences and get away. They eat your chickens, or they get out and eat other people's chickens. They bark at people they're not supposed to when they're not supposed to, or they don't bark at people when you'd want. There's all kinds of problems that come with owning a dog that's not properly trained. Well, how about you learn how to train your dog? There's no bad dogs, just bad dog owners. A dog is actually a really simple animal to understand. The canine brain is very simple compared to a human brain. It works on very clear, concise rules. At canineacademy.us, you can learn how to train your dog with the core canine obedience course, or you can take the more advanced courses. And if you're not sure that this is right for you yet, thanks to Joel Ryle's generosity, you can sign up for the Problem Solving Library. It's basically a free course. You'll see exactly how everything works there, and you can decide whether or not you want Joel to take you to another level with your dog training. With that, I'm ready to get into it, but I just want to let you know something real, real quick here. I mentioned MSB with discounts. Most of our advertisers do discounts, but about 70 other partners do discounts on all types of things. And some of these discounts are really big. And you could become an MSB member for $50 a year. So it's totally worth doing. But it is that time of year when everybody puts everything on sale. Early Black Friday. That shit started like 3 weeks ago. I don't do dumb shit like that. But I am doing a sale because we are in that Thanksgiving period where everything goes on sale. And because I haven't done one in a long freaking time. MSB right now is $35 a year for life. The discount code is TURKEY. The word TURKEY. All lowercase, just T-U-R-K-E-Y. That'll get you the discount. I've heard from a few people who already have accounts under the regular pricing that want to convert over. There is not an easy way to do that, but there is a way to do that. You can email me and we'll work something out on the back end. I have no way to let the system simply let you renew early. If I did that, you'd have two accounts and you'd be getting billed twice, and then you're mad at me and you think I did it to you, especially if you don't ask first and you did it on your own. So that discount is available right now. How long it's going to run? It will run into December 1st. Monday, December 1st, it will go away. At that point, I don't care if your dog get your discount code or whatever, the sale is over. If you don't mean what you say when you say it, then there's no reason for anybody to believe anything else that you say. All right, with that, let's dig into this, right? Let's talk about preparedness as a form of just being a responsible freaking adult. Yeah? So we can start off. What does preparedness even mean? What does it mean to be prepared? What does it mean to be a prepper? And it's actually a relatively simple concept. And it's something that all successful people do, at least in some compartmentalized point in their life. It means to assess the upcoming situation as it should happen and as it could happen in case of the best scenario, the most likely scenario, and the worst scenario. And then to put redundancies in place for all three of those. This is how we capitalize on best case. This is how we just go run of the mill. And this is what we do if things go catastrophically wrong to mitigate that catastrophic wrong. There's some things we can't do anything about, right? There's some things we can mitigate, and there's some things we can completely prevent. But if we don't make the evaluation first, we're doing what my father-in-law used to call wasting your God-given brain. My father-in-law, Fred, he really believed that God gave us all a brain. Even people that you would look to and think of as kind of a simple person, that the power of their brain was more than they realized, and that anybody could at least look at something and go, hey, before I do this or don't do this, I should determine whether or not it's worth doing or not doing, and what the consequences of doing it or not doing it are, and then I should make a decision after I've made that evaluation. This is not radical, right? It's not radical to be prepared. It's responsible to be prepared. That's what my father-in-law was saying when he said that. And you know, this is a guy that went through World War II as part of the underground as a teenager in Europe in the Netherlands, whose father was a key player in the underground who ended up in a Nazi internment camp, a concentration camp during the war, and was days from being executed before he was released. So he knew something about tragedy and hardship. You know, my grandparents on both sides were quite influential in putting a preparedness mindset into me very young. On my dad's side of the equation, my grandfather on my dad's side, he was the guy I'd sit on the porch with, and he would tell me the story of the grasshopper and the ant. And his version of the grasshopper and the ant, the grasshopper did not learn his lesson, in my old grandfather's words, and he froze his ass off and he died. And sometimes it was, and then the ants came out and chopped them up and ate them, right? Like, he was dead serious about it. And why? Because he came to America in the turn of the last century, which is weird to say, but it's true, as a young kid, as a Ukrainian immigrant, to Ukrainian immigrant parents. They had to learn the language when they got here. Then he lived through World War I, not quite old enough to go to World War I, and just young enough to go to World War II and live through the Great Depression in between. That's kind of crazy when you think about it, right? And he's the one that taught me about gardening. And it was he that taught me about, you know, fishing and hunting as a way to get food and things like that, and told me the old stories about all the things that people went through in that time. He was the one that taught me about the fact that his family used rat traps nailed to trees made with peanut butter during the Great Depression to catch squirrels for the pot, right? That's pretty freaking basic, and it's also pretty freaking primal and pretty freaking, like, you better be prepared for things. My grandmother on the other side, she was the one that made me love cooking. She was I have Ukrainian on one side and Italian German on the other. My grandmother was the Italian side. And she taught me about how valuable it was to be able to make food that was delicious, that was better than you could go to a restaurant and get. She's an amazing woman. Why was she so into preparedness? Same thing. Her parents came to America about the turn of the last century. She was born a little bit later after they got here, but she was one of 11 children. Her parents came in through Ellis Island, moved across the river into New Jersey like so many people did, especially from Italy at the time. He was a barber, and he raised a family of 11 kids on the salary of a barber. She grew up. She married my grandfather. He was a soldier before the war even started. They went through the Depression together. After growing up in a family with 11 or 10 siblings, then he ended up sent off to the war. He came back from the war after, you know, all of that. She had to work and deal with without him during the war, like so many wives did, because she didn't come home every 90 days from a deployment or something like that back then. And then they built this incredible life together into the future. So with those two sides of my family coming together, and the grandparents on, you know, my mom's father and my dad's mother were influential too. It was just those were the ones I spent the most time with. Man, of course I came through this with a preparedness mindset. But how many people didn't? And just to demonstrate how dumb it is to not be prepared, let's look at some places where people were not prepared. Three scenarios. And I'm going to tell you that not just people in this audience, not just people that fancy themselves preppers, would say that most of these people were stupid. But I want you to look for another word to unify all three of these scenarios. Scenario number one, call a guy Bill. Bill is really good at his job. He's in a company. He has about 10 other people who do the same job as he does at his level. And Bill's boss is moving up in the world because somebody's retiring at the top. And this is a company that always tries to promote from within. Bill's so good at his freaking job that he basically has a promotion in the bag. But the leadership team is going to go through a formality of a presentation and interview just to make sure that Bill really is the right guy. They tell him, you're going to come in. We want you to do a 20 to 30 minute presentation. And then we're going to talk and discuss your new role. And if everything checks out, we're going to offer you the promotion. Bill feels really good about this, and he knows why he's being looked at. Hey, I'm good at what I do. He builds a presentation based on all his past accomplishments and everything he's already done and how wonderful Bill is, which, of course, they all know that already because that's why they're offering Bill the job. No one questions his ability to do the job he has right now. He does no market research beyond the level he's currently at. He doesn't know what competitors are doing. He doesn't know what the industry's doing. He is tunnel visioned into his level. He goes and he does that presentation, and the leadership team is immediately disappointed, but they think, well, maybe that's just Bill's presentation style. Surely he knows these other things he's thought about. So they start asking him questions like, what is your plan to build the level and quality of the team that are now your coworkers that are going to become your direct reports and to build the quality of the production of the people beneath them? What's up with we have a competitor and they have this new product line coming out. What is your idea to how we can angle our work to head that off before it comes to pass? Bill doesn't even know that new product exists, even though anybody that did 5 minutes of research would know that it exists. Bill's interviewing for the job he had versus the job he's being offered. The leadership team is like, this sucks, but we got to shop this around. We got to take some other people from the team. If they're not good enough, then we got to hire from the outside, which we don't normally do. Bill blew it. Okay, scenario one. Scenario number two. Woman, we'll call her Kathy. Kathy decides she wants to get into shape and test her mettle a little bit, so she decides to take up hiking. She gets a nice pair of comfortable walking shoes, right? And she finds a park a few miles from her home. It has kind of a nice one-mile loop. It's flat. It's easy to walk on. Kathy starts making one-mile hikes. After a couple weeks, she starts making two-mile hikes. Pretty soon she's able to do 4 miles pretty quickly and not lose her breath, and she feels pretty good about it. So Kathy decides to graduate away and really test her mettle. She finds a place about an hour and a half from home. It is a very rugged uphill, downhill, multiple water crossings, 15-mile hike, one of those kind of hikes where you hike in about, you know, 4 or 5 miles. You take one wing, and it makes a loop and comes back, and that whole loop is about 15 miles. So she's like, I got to get ready for the hike. So Kathy goes out and buys a cheap day pack. She gets a 16-ounce Nalgene bottle, fills it up with water, tosses it in there with a handful of granola bars and a windbreaker. She wears her same shoes and she takes a hike. She doesn't tell anybody that she's doing it. She doesn't tell them when she's leaving, when to be expected back by, or where she's going. So Kathy's walking along and she's going on this hike and she's, making her test and she's feeling pretty good about it. And she's on her way back on the loop and she's past the halfway point. She looks at her little old watch or she looks at her cell phone and the time, she does some mental math in her head and realizes I'm way behind. And if I don't pick up the pace, it's going to be pitch dark out here and I'm going to be alone because she hasn't seen many people on this trail. So she picks up the pace. She gets to a few water crossings, and since it's getting dark, she can't really figure out a way over. She just plows through it. Now her feet are freezing freaking cold. The temperature's dropping, and the sun's going down. Of course, she steps on a rock, twists her freaking ankle, and it's bad. It's swollen as shit. She has no first aid supplies, no way to generate heat, no secondary means of communications, and she realized she's screwed. And it's getting colder and colder. Her feet are colder and colder. No extra socks, no nothing, right? And she ends up deciding it is probably the best choice given the circumstances. I'm going to hole up for the night. And she wraps that shitty little windbreaker around her. She shivers all night long. Feels like she's going to freeze to death, but she doesn't. Her feet are numb. She's miserable. The sun comes up. She kind of limps a little bit along, but she just can't do it. Finally, somebody comes. They can't carry her. It's just one person. They go for help. It takes till that evening before search and rescue gets her out of the trail. That's scenario number two. Scenario number three, we have a well-paid professional. He's an executive in like a Fortune 100 company, big-time player. He makes a freaking assload of money. He does at least throw that mandatory 10% into the 401k, but that's it. His wife doesn't work. Why would she? He makes a lot of money. She shops like it's a sport. It's a pastime. It's her job to go out and spend money, to refurbish the home, to just spend as much money as possible. He never tells her no. They have two wonderful kids. They're like 12 and 15. They're doing well in school. They're going to be able to get some scholarship money, and they're going to be able to borrow the difference, so I ain't worried about the kids going to school. Everything's going to be fine. He has almost no savings whatsoever. They have a couple credit cards. The balances on them exceed the annual salary of a person that works at, like a middle-class job. That's how much money they owe just on credit cards. They still have debt on their student loans. They pay the minimum. She has a degree and doesn't even work. Yeah. But everything's good. In fact, they sit down with their financial advisor and he goes, this isn't so bad. You keep making those contributions. You keep getting those bonuses. Hey, by the time you're 55, you'll be able to retire and maintain this lifestyle. The house will be paid for then. You won't have that big expense. It'll be great. And then his company has an Enron moment. It's bad. They go into bankruptcy in a week, just like Enron did. Complete spiral. He had a severance deal. There's no severance deal. They're picking the bones of what's left of the company's assets in bankruptcy court. He's cut loose, gone, done. He's got almost no financial reserve other than that 401k plan. So what does he do? He tries to find a new job. Of course, he hasn't maintained his relationships with his past bosses and clients and contacts because everything is being dedicated to this new Enron type company that he was part of. They were paying him all this money. So his references are shit at this point. He stopped updating his skill set. He didn't keep learning new things other than the things he needed for the job that he had. That he was so good at, he didn't even really do that. And now the name of his company is dog shit. They're thinking, how does an executive VP in this company not know that they were cooking the books? Nobody wants to hire them. This happens. We've seen it happen in our lifetimes, folks. He has nobody to fall back on. And the people that are thinking about hiring him, they're like, either he knew and he's a crook and he's part of this shit. And by the way, when a Fortune 100 company does that, it tanks the whole market. Everybody's suffering. And you're one of the fuckers that did it. But they're also thinking this, if he didn't know, how stupid is this guy? Now, he might have done nothing wrong and still not known because an executive VP in a company that size is still like upper mid-level. They hand out titles like candy at Halloween to make you feel good. It's the cheapest form of promotion, give a person a title, right? So he ends up with a job paying about 35%. They lose the house. They have to go into the 401k to take out enough money to pay first and last month's rent and cover some of the interim bills. They go to bankruptcy after that, so they're in a rental house to discharge the, you know, 75, 80 grand in credit card debt that they have. They're still saddled with the freaking student loans. And this guy was a rolling baller a few weeks ago. And now, instead of retiring at 55 early, he's going to be lucky if he retires by 70 if the anxiety and stress doesn't give him a fucking heart attack first. He's 45 years old. Now he's looking at another 30 years almost of work. Okay, what is the one word you would use to describe all three of those people? And I'm betting many of you are thinking idiot, moron, stupid, retard, who knows what, right? I agree, and derivatives of those words as well, foolish, dumb cough, right, whatever. You know what the word I think of, though, is? Irresponsible. Irresponsible. And I'm going to tell you, like, the last one, when those type of things happen, usually that coincides with, like, an economic problem. So the money you do have in stocks and bonds or Bitcoin or whatever that you could sell, usually it's depressed and you have to, then you're forced into selling it at the worst possible time. Again, I'm back to irresponsible. Just real quick, I don't want to go through all of those scenarios fully again, but let's just do it real quick. What could the first guy have done with the presentation? Market research, researching the new job, be clear on what the new job was, presented himself as a candidate for the new job, with an understanding of the marketplace and the team he would be leading, and apply for the new job versus reapply for the old one. Simple. What could Kathy have done with her hike? Buy some decent shoes, do 10 minutes of research on the internet and figure out like the basic things you do when you hike. How about not go from a 4-mile flat hike right to a 15-mile hike that's going to take you 10 to 15 hours as a new hiker on rough terrain? How about do the basic math and figure it out? How about tell somebody before you leave? Like basically everything she did, do the opposite, right? How about carry some additional gear or shelter material so if you do end up stuck, you can start a fire and stay warm and dry, a change of socks, right? Like when I was telling that story, any of you guys that have hiked on any serious level at all, like even half-assed, like 5, 6, 7 mile hikes on weekends or some day hikes, you're like, this is a disaster waiting to happen. If she had just bought good waterproof shoes, she might have been stuck on the trail just on time, but she probably would have hurt her ankle, and after a miserable night, she would have walked to the end of the trail. How about telling somebody where you're going, when you're expected back, and where you'll be and what trail you're on? Then they can report you missing, and people know where to look for you. How about carrying some secondary means of communication? Because, gee, on these hikes, a lot of times, guess what? The cell phone doesn't work. Yeah? How about the last guy, the well-paid professional? If this dude had simply said, I'm going to have a 90-day emergency fund, we're going to minimize our credit card debt, and it was much money as we make, if we can't pay for it, we're not buying it, and the only thing we're going to finance are appreciating assets or needed leveraged assets, like maybe a car. Then when his company collapsed, he would have been economically okay. And if he had maintained his skill development and his connections and his resume and always been like, hey, I'm not really looking, but I need to know what's out there and been informed and been engaged with other people and paid attention. Even if he didn't know what his company was doing, there's always signs and he could have leaped before he needed to. All of those scenarios I just redid, that's just being fucking responsible. That's all it is. It's just being it's responsible with the opportunity you're being given. It's responsible with the activity you're taking on. Or it's responsible with the gift that you have in a great career. Why wouldn't you do it? But people, what is more common? People being prepared in those scenarios or those scenarios happening the way I just described? We all know the answer. We all know the answer. So let's think of some other forms of preparedness that people have no problem with. Nobody's like, I can't believe you're doing that. You're crazy. Are you on that TV show, that doomsday prepper thing, right? How about getting ready for key tests? When you're in high school, like the SATs or the ACTs, nobody's like, why are you preparing for that, right? Or what about like if you're getting into like you're going to go into postgraduate and you're like a lawyer, you want to go to lawyer in law school, you want to go to medical school, you're studying and you're getting prepared for the MCAT or the LSAT. No one's like, oh, don't do that. Or if like you're seeking a professional certification where you have to take an exam, like one of the exams I took was an RCDD exam when I was in telecom. And it had like a 68% failure rate first time people took it. No one said shit like, what are you doing with your spare time? Why are you studying for that? No, like, oh, you're doing that. If they knew what it was, I'll go ahead. So that's okay. Nobody gets upset with that. How about planning a route in advance for a long road trip? No one's like, why are you doing that? You have GPS. I'm sure some people, but most people are like, well, what are you doing? Well, I'm driving from Dallas to Philadelphia. I'm figuring out where the area I'm going to stop. I'm making sure there's hotels in that area so I don't end up in one of those long 200-mile stretches to the next decent hotel. When I'm at a point where my eyes are burning, I'm making sure I have enough gas. I'm making sure I have some cash on hand. I'm making sure people know where I'm going and when I'll get to the other side and what have you. I'm staying in touch with people along the way. I made sure that the car's in good shape. I got an oil change and had it checked over. Everyone's like, well, of course you did. No problem, right? Okay. No one like, oh, are you crazy? You're a doomsday prepper. What about insurance on your car, your house, and your other property? Nobody's like, what the fuck do you have house insurance for? Your house isn't going anywhere because fires and storms and other forms of damage to homes occur. We all know this. No one's like, why do you have car insurance? Right? Like if you have a piece of shit beater and you have a very high policy on the car itself, people might question that because they're not going to pay you more than the car's worth. So you would only carry what's legally required at that point. But if you're driving around a $40,000, $50,000 vehicle, even if you paid cash for it, nobody questions when you have an insurance policy on that car. So if somebody T-bones it, including you didn't do anything wrong, it's sitting in a parking lot, somebody plows into it. That's happened to me, by the way. I had a car. Well, I was dumb because I was like, there's no way anything's going to happen. I had a really nice car when I was in the Army. I didn't think it was worth taking it to Panama. I had it sitting at my dad's house, and a drunk went off the road and completely totaled it, and I had no insurance on it. Because why? I'm not going to drive it for another 2 years. It'll be there when I get home. That was a mistake. Had I had insurance on it, it would have been pretty inexpensive, and no one would have said, you're an idiot for doing that. That was okay. But other forms of preparedness aren't. What about insurance for health care, like health insurance or health share programs, or something like long-term care insurance? Like a lot of people have this. They have like, if I end up in a nursing home or something, I don't want to end up in a state level piece of shit. I want to be where I'm going to be taken well care of. So they get long-term care insurance if they can afford it. Nobody says it's, some people say, I don't have the money for it, but no one says it's stupid to do. You may never use it, but if you need it, man, is it nice to have. We had somebody in our lives, our family's friends with, who one of the older members of their family ended up in a place where they had to be in a care facility for like the last 4 years of their life. It was a wonderful place, and she was as happy as you could be in a place like that. Without that long care insurance, the family could have never afforded it. So nobody questions this. Just think of how many forms of preparedness that we have that no one says is crazy. 401k plan. It's not enough by itself, but no one questions that. And when you say, well, I have a 401k plan, but I also have an investment manager or financial advisor, and I save money beyond what I can put into my 401k, and I make careful decisions about the money that we spend, and that way I'm making sure that I am on track for a good retirement. Nobody says you're crazy. Okay. Then why do people not respect and practice things as well like insurance for your food supply? However you handle it. You're a father. You have two kids and a wife to take care of. She works two, but you're the primary breadwinner. If you get laid off, are they going to eat? And how long will they eat for? How long will your shitty little unemployment check go to keep them in fed alone? And can things go wrong with the food supply? Did you see how long the food support lines were during the COVID bullshit, which wasn't even a real problem, was a government-created problem? Can I say that now without getting demonetized or banned from YouTube? The government caused that problem. This was not a viral problem. It was a government overreaction, overreach, and overregulation problem. But it doesn't matter why there's a problem, just that there's a problem. So the person has a 90-day food supply of food that they will eventually buy and eat anyway. Why is that person crazy? Why is that person not simply a rational person that understands things go wrong, who maybe buys an extra freezer and a generator so he can keep his other power on, but also that freezer on if there's a long-term power outage to ensure the food that he's already insured, right? and goes to places like a Costco warehouse, buys larger quantities of food, gets a better price on them, saves money overall, and rotates his food forward. So there's always at least 90 days worth of food available at his home. So if he gets laid off for the next 3 months, I don't even care about food. Why is he crazy? Why isn't that considered a virtue? Why isn't that considered responsible? Has no one read The Ant and the Grasshopper lately except the Disney version, which is a bunch of bullshit? I guess so. What about keeping past professional relationships intact, right? This is something that everybody, like no one actually criticizes it, but how many people do it? How, if you are especially a professional, like you are a person that if you are trying to replace your current job, you're in a competitive space against other professionals. And you've had maybe one or two jobs prior to the one you have now. You have people you worked with, people you worked for back then, and clients that loved you. If they don't serve a direct purpose in your life today, do you maybe once or twice a year pick the phone up and say, hey, Mike, how you doing? How's it going? How's your life? How's the kids? How's the old workplace? Oh, you moved. Where are you at now? How many don't even have just a simple email, like little sub list where you don't mail everybody at once, but you can pull them out of it? That occasionally you just send them like a news story or something. You know that this guy was really interested in Formula One racing and something. I just made that up, by the way, right? Doesn't matter what. Like he's really interested in something. You see something across your news feed. Hey, Mike, did you know this happened? What do you think about it? That basic maintaining the connection so that when oh shit happens in your career and you say, oh, do I have references? Do I have references? And you hand them a sheet of 20 people to call. And you already know when that phone rings on the other end and they pick it up, they're going to go, oh, Bill's great, man. You know, not only is Bill really great at his job, he's a great person. He cares about people. He works really hard to maintain relationships. Why don't we do it? Why don't they teach that? Like some of the shit I'm talking, why don't we teach this in school? And I don't mean like university. I mean K-12. I say this about a lot of my episodes. This episode should be like a high school course, or at least a piece of a high school course about life, shouldn't it? What about hedging our wealth with some alternative investments? Why is it crazy to own some silver and gold or some Bitcoin? Or why is it crazy to think of things like tools and skills themselves as investments? Like, what are you doing? Well, I'm learning how to do this thing. Well, nobody really does, like, let's say blacksmithing. Nobody really does the thing anymore. But a blacksmith can make tools. A person can do things with tools. If you can make your own tools, you're pretty unlimited, right? It's also a side hustle. There's things that you can make as a blacksmith. And I'm not saying to be a blacksmith. I'm saying to have something, you know, maybe woodworking. I know some of you guys are incredible woodworkers in this community. That has value. That's something that we're not going to replace overnight. It's just not going to happen. What about something like having a bug out bag? Oh, now we've got a doomsday preppers, a bug out bag, right? And have you ever noticed, like if you ever watch like a crime show or something like that, and they talk about preppers, they always have a bug out bag, and it's how they're going to survive when the world ends, as though anybody, no matter how well prepared, is going to survive out of a fucking backpack. The only way you're going to survive out of a fucking backpack is if you can't lift it because of how much gold's in it and you have enough financial value to buy shit if society has a place to buy shit, right? You can't. What is a bug out bag for? It's so that you can be comfortable for about 3 days. That's all that it is. If you have to bug out. Now, you might have to bug out because there's a storm and you have no place to go or you can't get to the place you plan to go. So you end up sheltering somewhere and then you have something of your own for comfort. You should have one for every member of the family. Why is that crazy? But I'll tell you the number one way I've heard people say they've used their bug out bags. The number one way, something horrible happens to a family member who ends up in the hospital. And the bug out bag is in a vehicle and they end up stuck at the hospital with that person and they have the basics of comfort with them. So how is it crazy? How is it doomsday preppers? How is it the fucking apocalypse to have a 72-hour kit? If we called it that instead of a bug-out bag, maybe people would chill their shit a little bit. Shouldn't everybody do this? An evacuation plan? What, are you crazy? Well, I don't know. Do you watch the fucking news? Do you see what happened in the last, like, not this year, but the prior year in Florida and the Carolinas alone? Do you not remember what happened in New Orleans? going back, what, almost 25 years now, 20 years now, Hurricane Katrina, and then followed up by Rita hitting the, like, the East Houston area. It's, I can't think of the actual place in Texas. Like, it's like Baytown, but it's, some of the L, but it won't come to me. Yeah. Like, we don't remember that. How many times have you seen everybody was forced to evacuate? Would it be good to have some stuff to take that's ready to go on a moment's notice and a plan of where the fuck you're going to go? How is this radical? How is it not irresponsible that if you're a grown-ass man, especially with kids, you know, let's say 8 and 12, kind of at an age where they will freak out, and a dog you love and a wife you love, and somebody says, well, if there was an evacuation order, what would you do? And you don't have a fucking answer for it. It seems pretty irresponsible to me. What about developing new life skills constantly? There's a lot in that movement now, but there's people that still think it's weird, but it's a preparedness thing. I believe that if you do not learn something substantial new every week, you are wasting your fucking life. I think you should learn something new every day, but I think at the end of every week, you should know something that empowers you as a being at a higher level, or what the fuck are you doing? Like, for your career, for your life, for your own mental health, something. That's not a high bar, but that's 52 a year. 52 a year times 10 years is 520 things you've added onto your life. And I don't mean that you accidentally stumbled into them. I mean that you are seeking them with intent, so that all the other things you will learn in periphery are added to it versus, oh, that stands in for it. That's living a mundane, normal fucking life. And the other way is living an exceptional life by having one goal every week. By the end of this week, I'll know a thing that I don't know right now that will have some sort of significant impact on my life today or my future or both. Again, why isn't this like a 10th grade high school course? Because they don't want you to think that way if you don't have the answer. A people like this would be hard to control, hard to govern, hard to tell what to do, hard to restrict, hard to just bully with propaganda, right? No, they don't want this. And whatever they don't want for you, because they is a group of sociopaths and psychopaths that see control and power above all else and take all problems that are such that they need to be dealt with and simply kick them down the road and let the next group figure out what to do with it. As long as it preserves their power and control for now, that's good enough. And even if they kick the can only far enough that they themselves will have to do it again, well, we kicked it once. We can kick it again. We don't give a fuck who gets hurt. You better care, because they don't. How about having a means of self-defense and the training to use it? Now we're going back to doomsday prayer. You carry a gun. I can't tell you how many people are like, you carry a gun? You mean like, do you ever get this one? Any of you guys that carry, and you actually, for some reason, you're having a conversation with somebody about it, and they give you this look in their eyes, so I'm about to do the camera, right? And they say it this way, you have a gun now on you? Like, all of a sudden, the calculus of the world shifted, and somehow you're a freaking deranged maniac. I haven't had many of those, because I generally don't tell people this. But there are times where maybe it will come up, like a discussion about defense or whatever. And, like, even a person that seems like they're pro-gun, that's usually who you would tell that to. But the concept that, like, but you're at a kid's softball game, and you have a gun? Look at all these other freaking people here. Go look for somebody gets shot at a sporting event and see how many times it's happened. Where you go, oh, I don't need to carry a gun. To me, it's where a sign says, I'm going to go to fucking prison if I take my gun in there. That's it. That's where I'm not going to take a gun. Why is that? Why would that be crazy? Why isn't that just responsible? It might even be a responsibility not everybody's ready for. I think if you do not believe you are ready for that responsibility, and you haven't had at least basic level safety and deployment training, you probably should. But what makes the person who does it not be considered more responsible than average? The main reason you carry a gun is to defend yourself, even if you don't know that. Do you want me to prove it? Okay, you're carrying a gun. I'm a bad guy. I walk into a restaurant. Old school Libby shooting, right? Mass shooting. I pull my gun out, and the first person I shoot is you. What good is your gun? I mean, if your buddy's with you, he doesn't have a gun, he knows you do, maybe it's good. But you see what I'm saying? Like, if you happen to be the first person attacked, now there are times where the person does defend themselves successfully with a gun. But what's more likely is when other people are under threat, you at a standoff distance have the ability to save the life of another person. I would call that accepting an extreme responsibility because it may in fact result in me or you having to take the life of another human being. And that is a serious thing. And the person willing to do it for the benefit of others, I call that person very responsible. I don't consider them a doomsday prepper. I don't consider them crazy. I don't consider them a wannabe Navy SEAL. I consider them a person who has made a very specific decision. I will have the means and the knowledge necessary to do whatever is necessary to defend myself so I can take care of my family and to defend others so they can do the same. How are we painting that as anything other than what it is? Fucking noble. How are we painting that as anything other than a virtue to aspire if you're not there to become that? How much safer would our society be if the majority of people thought that way? Even if the 10% scumbag rule still applied, if the scumbags know, like, gee, like one out of every fucking two people has the knowledge, the capability, and the ability to dirt nap me on the spot if I try to really hurt somebody, you might just have a more polite society at that point. People might think a little before they go popping off at the mouth, realizing that one out of two people I pop off on could pop me off. Yeah. I'm just saying, the most polite people I know are at gun ranges. Everybody's fucking so polite. Would you like to go downrange? Oh, yeah, sure. Okay. Are you sure you're ready? Okay. Yeah, yeah. Everybody put their guns down, right? Everybody open their chambers. Yeah. Okay. We'll all go down together. We'll all come back. Is everybody ready? Yeah. It's amazing how polite everybody is when everybody's armed. Right. And that's without the discipline I'm talking about. If you had the discipline to it, you would have a very polite, very safe society. I'm just saying, why is that considered crazy? And what about having an alternative means of communications? Whether that's a CB radio, whether that's having ham radio knowledge, whether that's having additional ways to communicate through internet technology or what have it beyond just a cell phone. Whether or not it's just having an old school landline. Because sometimes cell phones break, right? Whether it's your individual device or somebody like some idiot working on the tower crosses the wrong two wires, might be a while before it comes back up. And that might just be right in the middle or like one of those swirling, we call them swirling clouds of death here in Texas comes by and just eats the shit out of that. And now it eats the shit out of your home. And now you need EMS and it doesn't work. Having alternative means of communication might be a good idea. Why is that considered radical? You tell somebody you have a ham radio license. Oh, why would you do that? I don't know. I don't even have one. Doesn't mean I don't respect the people that do. I have alternate means of communications. I have ham radio gear and I know how to use it, right? And you can always use it in a disaster and I know enough about it to be able to use it. Why would you have that? Because you might need it. Where did we fall from? This country, even just like 70 years ago, might have been one of the most prepared societies that ever existed. If you go back and look at just like video from 50, 60, 70 years ago of kids in gym class and young boys in high school, they look like they're training for the fucking army. They were physically fit as fuck. Right now we have fat kids rolling all over the place in school. We used to get on the bus, three kids to a seat. I don't think we could do that anymore. There'd be two kids to a seat. They wouldn't fit on that bench seat anymore. Their two asses are too fat. We were prepared in like almost every way. There was no nation that would even think about invading this nation during World War II because half the men were armed. And they weren't just armed. These were people that hunted deer for a living. And if you can hit a deer at 200 yards, you can hit a fucking man, no problem. The deer you care that he's dead, the man you only care that he's down. Right? You're not trying to track him. Maybe you are, but you don't have to. In some ways, it's actually better in combat to injure an enemy soldier than to kill him because now his buddy's trying to save him. You take out two instead of one. They didn't want anything to do with this place back then. This country in World War II was able to ramp up from the middle of a depression to economic and industrial might almost overnight, churning out tanks and planes and ships. With half the men deployed to the war, we were still able, we couldn't do that shit today if we tried. We have lost all of this, right? All of this we've lost. Second Life Farm says all cattle eat grass on pasture for 90% of their lives. And he's answering somebody else's chat, but that's an interesting thing. If you have good grass and cattle, you have food. This country, 100 years ago, like 90% of society either directly or indirectly derived their living from agriculture. That's a single-digit number. How prepared can you be when the majority of society don't produce anything? They manage numbers. They manage people. They manage cycles. They manage marketing. They manage sales. But they don't make anything. They don't produce anything. At the end of the week, you say, what did you produce? They show you a spreadsheet. There's not even anything wrong with the person that does that, but there is a problem when the majority of people do that. There's a problem when the majority of people have a 40-hour week job that could be accomplished in 20 hours a week with email. And somehow they have a 40-hour. That's a problem. That's a problem. There's a problem when about roughly a quarter of the people in your country have to be on welfare with SNAP to eat. We're not prepared. We are not prepared as individuals. We are not prepared as communities. And we are not prepared as a country. And if you're in a situation like that, then for you to choose not to prepare your own family, I would say, is completely non-adult-like, irresponsible behavior. Preparedness is not radical. Preparedness is not radical. It's responsible. The reality is simple. Those who are not prepared feel fear, and people who feel fear are easy to control. I mean, understand that. Why do you think they don't want you to prepare? Why do you think they even have government web pages on how to put together something like a bug out bag, but then they turn around and they use their media apparatus to paint people who do it as being crazy? So they can say, well, like when everybody really loses their shit, well, we told you. But day to day, they keep sending you that message, right? It's like a doctor. You go to a doctor. He says, you know what, Bill? You know what, Tom? You know what, Sally? You know what, Kathy? You're a bit overweight. You need to adjust your diet to get healthier. But you look at the doctor, and he's way more out of shape than you are. He's breathing hard. He's sweating, even though he got the thermostat on 68 degrees in the office. He backs into and runs out of the office. You see the doctor, but he doesn't really see you, and he's a fat ass. How seriously are you going to take him? That's our government when they talk about anything along the lines of being prepared for anything. Their version of being prepared is do what we say. Go where we say to do. Get, like they tell you, when you're getting ready for hurricane season, make sure your vaccines are up to date. What the fuck does that have to do with a goddamn wall of water burying my house? Nothing. And we all know it. They're the fat doctor telling you to lose weight when you're 20 pounds overweight and he's 100. And they know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. They want control. They want power. When I say, why isn't there a class in high school that teaches this? That's always the answer. Not just today, but all the other days you've heard me say it. Because everything I teach, people don't realize this, everything I teach is actually preparedness. When I teach you basic lifestyle design, that's preparedness. When I teach you how to build a business, that's preparedness. The person that owns a business is more prepared than the employee, if the business is successful anyway. You know who will hire a business, a person who's run a business successfully, but for one reason or another decided not to anymore? Any sophisticated employer. Now, you have to have relevant experience to there, but they know that you're going to do things at a totally different level than any employee will, because once you actually flip into that world, you can never turn that hat off. I have a really great friend right now, and he made that switch, and I just keep thinking to myself, he's going to go back to being an entrepreneur again. He's going to do it because he's been through several different jobs and nothing really makes him happy. And that's because he lost control. But he also overworks. He works so much harder than he needs to. He could be coasting at this point in his career and still outperforming all his peers. That's how good he is. But he can't. He could say, I'm not going to drive down to Austin this week. I'm going to handle everything with a phone and email. And do just fine. But his work ethic won't let him. So, of course, if I was running a company and he was in the market, I would try to freaking hire him. Of course I would, because I know he's going to go charge as hard at a problem as I would. So when I teach entrepreneurship, it's preparedness. Tell me anything I teach that you think isn't preparedness. Gardening is preparedness, right? Hunting, fishing are preparedness. I made the case to you already today. There's people that when COVID hit, they said, well, Jack taught us about managing money and gold, about gardening and some stuff about outdoors, but not real survivalism. My brain wants to crawl out of my left ear to get away from you when you say stuff like that. Seriously, like just, ugh. Like what? What? What kind of retarded shit is that? I had literally had people tell me, you didn't teach us anything about real survival. What did I not teach you that would benefit you right now had you done it? Blank stares of dumbness. Because basic lifestyle design is preparedness, and it has to be. Because here's my question for you. What is the point of building an awesome career without preparedness behind it for redundancy's sake? What is the point of having an awesome plan for retirement without redundancy so you can stay tracking that goal permanently? Any engineer will back up what I'm about to say. Any good engineer, any system without redundancy is not only designed to fail, but designed to fail catastrophically. Like when I used to build networks, we always built redundancies into the networks. We literally built ring networks that if one component of the network failed, only that would then back around and basically do this, right? So maybe that one node or one sector of the network is down, but the rest of the network was up, instead of building it linearly with a linear backbone so that if this one failed, everything past it failed. We didn't do that. We built redundancy into a network. Why don't you build redundancy into your life? Why don't they teach you to build redundancy into your life? You go to engineering school, I'll tell you what, they, as much as I beat up on college, like certain really directed degrees, they will teach you about putting redundancy into your design. But will they teach you about putting redundancy into your life? What is your plan if your plan fails? That's a question you should be asking yourself all the time. My plan is X. What are my plans for every point of potential failure in that plan? Without that, you have nothing. It has to work. Well, that means, let me tell you what works. Nothing. First pass, first attempt, nothing. In fact, when it occasionally does, if you've got some experience in your life, you're always waiting for the other shoe to drop. And when it doesn't, you're like, wow, that was different. Here's like a stupid, simple little example. About 6 months ago, I decided to become an owner of a pellet smoker. And I did all the research, and I found the best freaking product set in my price range, in my budget. Specifically, I went with Pit Boss. Doesn't really matter, but I did. And I found like the one I wanted, and it just turned out that it was being discontinued. And the one that I wanted was exclusively sold. It was basically, there was the same version, but there was a slightly changed version that they sold through Academy and True Value only. And I love Academy, and I shop at Academy. So I'm like, there it is. That's the one. Well, this was like a $1,400 grill that on a discontinuation was on sale for $599, $600. Sold. Bought it online. Already had seen it. Knew I wanted it. Go pick it up. I expect to pick up a box. My buddy Michael happens to be here for the weekend, and we drive down together, so I got somebody to help put it in the truck. We don't have to put it in the truck. We don't have a box. Since they were discontinued, it was the floor models they were liquidating. It's already assembled. Woohoo! So two big guys like put this thing in the back of the truck for us. We ratchet strap it in. We drive home. And then we realize, like, those were big dudes. This freaking thing's heavy. And bringing it down? We back the tractor with the trailer up behind it, and we like roll it down into the track, and it goes perfect. And we just looked at each other like, that worked better than it seemed like it would, because it was still a pretty good drop. He drove the tractor. I walked alongside of it, first gear all the way, right onto the porch, plugged it in, done. We're just looking at each other like, okay, no problem at all. What's coming next? Do you know what does that, that makes you think that way? Experience. And what was the harm in thinking that way? Nothing. something could have, like, we could have went too fast. We could have fired the tractor up, not walk. Like, the fact that we were cautious is why it went off without a hitch. But by being cautious, if there had been a hitch, we would have been much better able to regulate it. Both of us in our 50s, we've seen a lot of hitches. We expect it. We expect a hitch so much. We expect a hitch so much that we, when it doesn't happen, we're like, wow, okay. Like, you check around, like, is something, where's the, this is done, it worked. Okay, great. That's how to live. That's not paranoia. That's not stressful. It's actually very non-stressful. When I watch people lollygag through shit like that, I get stressed for them. Because there's no understanding that something could fail. So when I teach lifestyle design, that is the most preparedness that I ever teach. Because design always has redundancy built into it. It's not design. It's not even bad design. It's slapped together bullshit. It's wishful thinking. You can make it look like design, but it ain't design. I can sit here and strum a guitar, and if you can't hear it, you're like, man, that dude can fucking play. Turn the audio on. It sounds like somebody killing a cat. That's how bad I am with a guitar. So it looks like music, but it ain't music. It doesn't sound like music because it ain't music. And so design without redundancy isn't design. It's hodgepodge, slap together, wishful thinking, bullshit dreams that will eventually meet a point of failure with no redundancy and therefore fail catastrophically again. This should be a course in high school, but it never will be. So you have to teach it yourself. And if you're a parent, you have to teach it to your kids. If you're a grandparent, your grandkids. Because without having that in my life, without having those two grandparents in particular, my mom's mother and my father's dad, I wouldn't have this today and you wouldn't have me today. Be that for them. Be that for the next. After you're gone, it is very possible your child or your grandchild will be sending out a message like I do today if you do your job right. Lastly, ask yourself simply, don't I deserve more? Am I not worth more than to go through life with no redundancy built in? Don't those I love deserve more as well? And am I really being responsible? Can you look at all the areas of your life, potential failures, and say, I have done the best I can with what I have at the current time to be as responsible as possible for myself and those I claim to care about? Wherever you come up with a no for an answer, don't flail yourself with a whip on the back. Don't get down on yourself and go, Jack thinks I suck. Ask yourself, what tools do I have? What adjustments can I make to shore that up? And every once in a while, do that evaluation again. It's looking into a mirror that nobody wants to look into, but you have to look into it to improve. You cannot become more than you are by being content with where you are. You can't do it. It's impossible. You have to seek flaws to improve. You have to find where you're wrong to do better. If you're an athlete, you're a football player, and you watch your game tapes, you don't watch, you know, all your touchdowns and all your great runs or receptions. You watch where you fumbled. You watch where you almost got in the end zone and you needed 4 more inches and it was there. If you had just done one thing differently or one thing harder, closed a little bit tougher, and you are critical of yourself, and you say, I failed me right there and I failed my team right there, and therefore the next time that shit happens, it will not happen. Or I did everything right to the best of my ability, and that guy was just a little stronger than me. And the only thing I can do about that is become stronger and faster and train harder is the only way I will get there. But until you find the flaw, you can't find the improvement. You can't learn without first admitting that you're wrong. It is impossible to learn unless you were wrong. And you were either wrong because you believed something untrue or you didn't know something in the first place. The absence of knowledge is wrong for that subject. Doesn't mean you're bad, just that you're wrong. So look in the mirror critically. Be your own best cheerleader and your own worst critic at the same time. Either alone is a recipe for disaster. The person that thinks they can't do anything wrong is going to be a fucktard in life and do a lot of stupid shit and be sure that it's everybody else's fault. And the person who is only critical of themselves will become depressed and miserable and sabotage every good thing they ever try to do. In all things, in the words of Mr. Miyagi, seek balance, Daniel-san. All right. With that, we've wrapped things up. I hope you guys enjoyed today's show. If you did, There's a lot of ways you can support us. And again, I want to remind you, one of the ways is by joining the Members Support Brigade. That's the MSB. And if you join the MSB, you'll get all these great discounts. The membership will pay for itself. Between now and December 1st, so right through the holiday of Thanksgiving, you can get MSB for $35 a year. It does apply to renewals. So once you're a member at that price, you stay a member at that price forever unless you cancel. And I always, like, sometimes people, you know, Jack, I didn't know, like, 2 months ago my membership got canceled. I didn't see a notification or anything. And I look, and as long as I don't see user canceled, I'll give them a code and bring you right back in. Or, you know, PayPal failed the renewal or whatever. That's fine. So $35, become an MSB member. Please consider doing it. Discount code Turkey. That brings us today's item of the day. If you do your online shopping starting at T-Spaz, no matter what you buy, you will help us out. And today's item of the day is the Meter Block Wireless Smart Meat Thermometer Kit. This is great. It comes with four probes. It's really for thick steaks, roasts, turkeys, chickens, substantial pieces of meat. So if you're doing like thin pork chops, like half-inch pork chops or half-inch steaks or something, you want to use an instant read like I had last week. But what's coming? Thanksgiving. And so it's Christmas. So we're talking hams. We're talking turkeys. We're talking a goose, right? We're talking a roast beef. We're talking a standing rib roast. We're talking substantial things. This is great for that. The Meter Block comes with four probes, though. So if you're doing like four thick, beautiful steaks, you can cook each one to its own temperature. It all comes to an app on your phone. And the daggone thing's on sale today for one of the best prices ever. It really is. It's knocked down to only $168 for the four probe set. This thing routinely sells for over $240. That's a big discount. You already got one? What a great Christmas gift. You're like, you know what, Jack? I'd love to get, you know, one of those, but really I don't cook for four people at a time with big steaks or anything. I only need one of them. You can get a single probe version for only $70 right now. If you ever think you're going to need the four, obviously you can do the math. It's almost like getting two of them for free. But if you only need one, you can get one for $70. So check this thing out. You're going to notice leading right up to Thanksgiving and Christmas, a lot of the things that I bring around for item of the day are going to involve cooking for obvious reasons. And then next up, one more sale item before we go today. My book, Laws of Life, is on sale. I did this myself. It took about a half a day for the pricing to kick in, but I have knocked the paperback price from $17.95 down to $13.95 and the Kindle price from $9.99 down to $8.99. The reason it says it's a $7.49 right there on my account is I happen to have a credit. So if I buy my own book, they're going to give me a little bit of my credit back. But $13.95 versus $17.95 and $8.99 versus $9.99 on the Kindle. Do consider picking up a copy of the book. It would make a great gift. If you don't have one yet, you know, read it. If you like what you heard today, you're going to love that whole book. You really are. And what is better as a gift, especially for younger people in your life? And I really feel that these books that I'm writing are tailor-made for people 15 to 35. Everybody can benefit, but that is the demographic that needs to hear it more than anybody right now. We all know why. What would be better for that person in your life that fits that description than an operator's manual for success in life? You think about it, they give you this incredible, like, creation, God, however you want to frame it, gave you this incredible, powerful 3-pound piece of fat in your head that is the most powerful supercomputer known to man. It contains the ability to retain more knowledge than a database. A data center of computers. We still, like, neuroscientists can't explain how your mind can have the amount of pure stored information that it does in such a small space. There's really no good explanation for it. There's some really crazy shit in the field of something called noetics. But you didn't get an operator's manual for it. You got a K-12 education and maybe university level that programmed you through propaganda to do what you were told. And you wonder why we have problems. I'm not a genius. I don't claim to be one. But this book is my attempt to install an operator's manual in the mind that allows you maybe not to reach your fullest potential, but to at least take control over that power. Because when you have power and you use it inappropriately, you hurt yourself and others. You wouldn't give a 16-year-old kid, no matter how much money you had, if you're a sane person, the keys to a Ferrari and say, here's your first car. Because the car in power exceeds the experience of the driver. It's a recipe for disaster. What about an operator's manual for the human mind and the human life? That's what Laws of Life is. If you haven't picked up a copy yet, please do so. If you have picked up a copy and it's been good for you and you haven't done so yet, please leave me a review on Amazon. Thank you guys for tuning in today. I really appreciate it. I will catch you tomorrow with another episode. Just run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. Revolution.